When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Monday. That means it's time for the Wrestling Inc. Monday Night Raw after show. And have we got a show for you? Judgment Day has a heck of a night. Braun Breaker keeps on rolling, and Sheamus and Ludwig Kaiser have a surprisingly good one. Not surprising, they're both good, but you know what I mean. But before we get into all of that, allow me to introduce the crew. I'm Jack Farmer, being joined by Jimmy Corderas and Justin Labar. Justin, it feels like I haven't seen you in a very long time. How are you, pal?
I'm good. It's been 2 weeks. I was out last week, so yeah, it's been 2 weeks since you've seen me. That's a long time in your world when we're used to podcasting weekly with each other.
2 weeks is too long for me, Justin. I need you at least once a week.
Apt maybe Heart Grow Fonder.
You know, maybe more than that. Maybe even twice a weekend. You know, over at the Busted Open, I feel like I can always check you out there. Maybe that's where I should be listening to you if I don't get to hear you on a Monday.
Every Sunday morning and Friday morning.
I can't Friday as weekends. We'll say twice.
He's everywhere.
Everywhere. Jimmy, you're everywhere as well. Have you been? I saw you on Wednesday, though. So yeah. I'm not. I don't miss you.
Absence doesn't make the heart grow fonder here. But, you know, I'm doing my thing. And, yeah, like you said, Justin, by the way, my Sunday morning ritual is homemade pancakes, my deep, dark brewed coffee, breakfast blend. This is a good. I'm not going to pump the, they don't pay for it. So I'm not going to, promote the brand, but, Busted Open. It's, I listen to it every Sunday and almost every day. What the heck? And I love doing this thing too. So by the way, I have to mention this way. I've stopped drinking cola for a long time. I'm staying away from the junk food and that kind of stuff, but I broke down today and bought some cola that I saw. I won't tell you the brand. Whatever.
Unless they sponsor us.
Yes, exactly. Let me put it this way. It's not Pepsi, so I'm not.
RC Cola, baby.
But it was this cola, but it was made with Quebec maple syrup in it.
Wow.
Yeah, I just saw it there and I said, do I or don't I? I said, you know what? I broke down and I tried it. And Audra, my wife, a little too sweet for her, but wow. For me, it's like this I like. And I'm afraid that I'm just going to dip back into the cola scene again. I know it has nothing to do with wrestling, but just thought I'd throw it out there.
Now I picture Jimmy says that, I don't know if Jimmy's going to know this reference. Jack, you might. I don't know if I don't, movie taste. It makes you think of that scene outside of in Wedding Crashers when they're outside the church and they're trying to figure out what their identity is going to be. And one of them suggests they're going to be maple syrup conglomerates. And Vince Wall's character goes, I know everything there's to know about maple syrup. Now I'm picturing Jimmy as a, you know, when he had hair, he put a little maple syrup in the hair to keep it up slick.
Yeah, he just used it for like everything in his life. Somehow he finds a way to.
By the way, I sold this the other day too. I had a little accident, but cutting the grass. Believe it or not, cutting the grass. I had an accident up here. Anyways,
how did that happen?
I think you're doing it wrong.
Long story short, there's a few trees on the property, and usually I'm pretty good at ducking below the branches. Not quite this time.
So you took a ref bump while doing landscaping.
Yes, exactly. And guess what? I sold it longer than Orange Cassidy after pile driver on the steps. What can I do?
Here's the thing too, is I bet as he was out, all these different things were happening after he got hit. He bumped his head. He was down. And then there were people fighting in his yard. He didn't catch any of it. He got up. It was fine.
Somebody ran in, stole his maple syrup. He missed the whole thing. They ran back out the kitchen.
Nope. Yeah. Saw nothing while he was out.
Man, this stuff writes itself. I can't believe it.
We got a great show lined up for you. But first, I want to say thank you to everyone joining us. Like, comment, share, subscribe, 5-star reviews. I try to do good about getting in the YouTube comments. I've been a little bad recently. I haven't been responding lately, but I will be getting in there. So if you leave us a YouTube comment, I'll respond as long as it's a good one. And Nick, I see your super chat that just came through. I'm going to save that for when we get to Karrion Kross's bit, because the question is about Karrion Kross. But we will bring that up, but just give me a second to get there. We got some news. We got some big news that's been coming through. Of course, lots of contract news lately in WWE. Ricochet's contract is up this summer, it's being reported. And Natalya is also looking like her contract is coming up very, very soon. Jimmy, you had mentioned about Natalya. We'll talk about what she said later on in the show and her bit. But she had a line that was very interesting. Of course, I just thought it was a throwback to somebody else's catchphrase. But you may have heard something different.
No, I caught it as something, as an homage a little bit, maybe. I don't know if this is buying into that whole, because somewhere else they're having the tournament, the Owen Hart tournament, and a lot of people are reading into that. Is it possible that she may jump over there? Is it possible because her contract is coming up and apparently has not been renewed at this time, as far as I know? I haven't heard anything different, unless you guys can correct me here. But, you know, it's always nice to speculate, and because that idea is out there, it always gets people thinking, oh, what about the possibilities? And who knows, maybe there is a possibility that she can be on loan. You know, if she does come to an agreement with WWE, maybe they could put her on loan and let her go over to AEW to just participate in that tournament, because that would be something I think she would be interested in, to pay an homage to her Uncle Owen, which, you know, she adored him. So, you know, hey, there's a lot of cards in play here. There's a lot of what ifs and what abouts, and that's fun to speculate about. But at the same time, you know, she's going to do what's best for her, and we'll see what happens. It's one of those wait and see situations, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Justin, as we get, I feel like lately these contracts have all been getting very close to the last minute to be signed. Some of them even sort of going over the expiration date, as we've seen some people have now let their contracts lapse. Do you think that, now we've obviously thought that maybe this is just the way now with the merger things have changed, but do you think there's also something to the fact that now wrestlers know that there are opportunities in other places? So now the wrestlers have a little bit more leverage than they've had in the past?
Well, the wrestlers certainly have more leverage, and I'm of the belief that the closer you get to the expiration date of these wrestlers' contracts, the more the leverage is in their favor. The deadline becomes more panicked if you're TKO, if you're WWE, because you want to get them signed, and you know, you gotta keep creative going, keep creative being built for them. So I'm not sure what's here. You know, she said that line. She even put up a gif of Owen, an anvil, right around the time when Owen won the King of the Ring back in 94. And so, you know, yeah, it is interesting time. And if her contract with WWE isn't about to naturally expire, that it would, you know, if it naturally expires, there's no non-competes. So that means that if it expired on Tuesday, she can, in theory, show up somewhere Wednesday. You know, and so that is interesting time with that Owen Hart Cup coming. And there is a women's side to that Owen Hart Cup. And she, as Jimmy said, adored Owen. And I'm sure that since Owen's widow Martha, since the Owen estate has signed off and endorsed this tournament the last couple of years, I'm sure there is a part of her that would like to check that off on her wrestling bucket list, to be part of that tournament. There's not ever going to be, at least as far as we know up to this point, there's never going to be an Owen Hart tournament in WWE, because Martha Hart's not going to allow that. Mm-hmm. So I could see her wanting to be part of that. The dynamic that becomes interesting here is, I think Natty's probably done the most she's ever going to do in WWE in terms of, I think she's hit her ceiling in terms of booking stature. And I don't think she ever got her fullest potential, but that's a whole other conversation. So I could see one part of her wanting to go over and have that opportunity, and she could do what she's done in WWE with AEW in terms of trying to help their division. all in good, you know, leaving on good terms at WWE, no hard feelings. Her husband still works for WWE. So, I mean, if it could be worked out, that would be interesting. And I could see, I really could see that being something that goes down as a timeline of things. And even if it is just signing a 1-year deal just to go and help and, you know, see how that 1 year goes. Maybe she stays longer. Maybe she comes back and she's a trainer at the PC. She lives in Florida, you know, and she goes into the Hall of Fame then. Talking about WWE, a lot of things can happen, but I really do lean into the fact that her to AEW for an Owen Hart tournament seems like it would have a lot of reasoning, a lot of makes sense in this situation.
Yeah, we got Dylan Matthews saying Natty isn't going anywhere. Nobody leaves WWE when business is this popping. Maria saying Natalya in AEW would be so dope. I would actually like to see her in AEW. I think. To a lot of what you've said, Justin, I think she's done a lot of what she's going to do in WWE. And if she stayed in WWE, that's great, too. I think she's fantastic. There's a lot of stuff for her there, though. But I think creatively, she could do some different stuff if she was to go to somewhere else. And I always say, though, to put my cards on the table, people jumping ship is always more fun to me than it is them staying still, regardless of which way it goes. Like Cody going to WWE, is like, that's way more fun than Cody staying. You know,
yeah, and of course, business in WWE is great. So I understand that comment, but again, if she's seeing that, okay, this is as far as I'm going to go booking wise right now, and she might even understand. Look, WWE has a lot of young female talent that's just coming up, and so if she sees that her only role really is to take some L's, you know, if she can get paid comparable over an AEW. And maybe if she gets a role that her husband has in AEW, or the role that TJ has at WWE, helping as a producer, if she can also do that in AEW and help more younger female talent, I mean, that might be appealing to her, along with the Owen Hart Cup, of course.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But also, you have to think about it from the WWE's perspective, too. Maybe she does feel like she can do a lot more and contribute more behind the scenes in WWE at the Performance Center. Like you said, she lives in Florida, and her husband is doing a lot of great work down there with them. And she could be like a real mentor for this women's division that's really thriving. They've got a stacked roster of women. You know, even Shawn Michaels commented recently that he thinks of the women's division in NXT and the WWE is as stacked as it's ever been. And he could be right. And, he has an argument there. So why not have someone like Natalya, who has that experience and that pedigree, to teach this younger talent instead of just being the person who goes out there, like you said, and takes the L to put the younger talent over. She can actually work with them backstage in a better capacity and work with them in... Maybe they transform Florida into the dungeon.
And the last thing I'll say, and again, if Natty ends up re-signing with WWE, great. I have no problem. Yeah. But just again, on making the argument of how I can see her not, she's been with the company. She's easily right there with Miz and Kofi and R-Truth as your longest tenured full time talent. So I have to imagine she's worked her way up pretty nice in the pay scale. And again, if you're TKO, and we've seen this happen with WWE recently, both with cuts happening, you know, in the office and internally, and then them cutting some talent that, you know, might have been higher priced contracts like a Jinder Mahal or talent that we're paying this, but we just don't have anything for them anymore. That might be another thing where it's like, look, you know, if you got no more booking for Natty, that's moving the needle, that's going to put her prominent, but we're paying her and she's on the top end of the scale. Again, might be a business decision that they make. You know, they might make an offer to her, but it might be a lowball offer or something that she knows that she could go out and get comparable or better. So again, these are all just factors to keep in mind that I've been thinking about of where her situation could be at with them.
Yeah, and I want to, as far as the movement goes, I just want to always say, you know, if Ethan Page re-signed with AEW, we'd be like, good for him. That's nice. Yeah. I'm glad he got another contract. But him showing up in NXT was like, whoa, what happened? Crazy. Mm-hmm. This is interesting. Movement's always fun. I want to, before we move on from the contract stuff, of course, Ricochet's is up this summer. And that has a few people in the chat saying that he might benefit from going somewhere else. Jimmy, I think a lot of people see just how talented Ricochet is in the ring, and he's getting TV time, which is half the battle, but not quite getting the dubs, maybe not getting the championship opportunities, things like that. Do you think that he should test free agency, or do you think he's better off staying where he's at?
I think it's an interesting question because you have a lot of variables in play, not just from a talent perspective and what he does on television, how he could be presented differently in AEW. His fiance is there as well. You know what I mean? Or TNA. But his fiance is there as well in WWE. And I know people say, well, so-and-so works over here and their other half works in the other place. It does make it difficult from a relationship perspective because you're on different schedules and it's hard to coincide when you're going to be together and that sort of stuff. So that does play a factor. But as far as Ricochet, like you said, he does get a lot of television time, regardless of the fact whether he gets a lot of W's or not. He is a guy that the fans are still behind, despite the fact that he's not winning matches. So that means something, that there's something there that they could work with. Feeding him to Bron Breakker right now, we're going to talk about that later. I know people have mixed reactions about that. I have maybe a different mindset than most people, but I think wherever he goes, he's going to be fine because he is that talented, and I think people will be behind him. So whatever choice he makes for the better for him, I think will be the right one. It's not up to me to decide, but I think whatever he decides, I think he's going to flourish either way.
Yeah, Justin, any thoughts on the potential Ricochet free agency situation?
Well, Jimmy's right. I mean, the fact that his fiance is there in WWE, that is a factor. Because again, if you go to another wrestling company and you're on one schedule on the road and she's on the other, I mean, yeah, that all of a sudden makes it, that boils down to like maybe 1 or 2 days at most that you might be at home together. So that is a factor. I think it's going to come down to Ricochet, how creatively fulfilled is he at this point? I think again he's kind of at the ceiling of where he's going to be creatively in WWE. You know, he's the speed champion, but he doesn't even have to bring the title onto Raw. I think that's kind of where he sets in. Ricochet is a phenomenal athlete. He is highlight reel material. He's gift material. Can't cut a promo. He can't talk people in the building, and that's what's going to be his cap. If he's fine with being in the role that he is, which is a great live event talent for the crowd, a great high flyer, and he's just going to always be the guy who's going to be in the spot. Oh, we got to introduce a Bron Breakker, feed him to Ricochet. If he's fine with that and he's getting paid well and he wants to be on the same road schedule with his fiance, then cool. If not, he could not sign with a major company, or he could sign very short-term deals and just kind of float around. He could float around the entire independent scene of wrestling and probably make as much, if not more, than what he'd make in WWE, and be in control of everything. He'd be booked as the main event, whatever indie show he's on. He's going to control all of his merch and all of his that. He's going to get all of his travel paid for, first, everything. So, you know, he could have a very good life if he wanted just to make his own shots and decide how many weekends he wanted to work. So like Jimmy says, it's going to come down to what he wants. I say it's going to come down to creatively, how fulfilled is he? Does he think there's more out there for him creatively on the independent scene in AEW, Japan, what have you?
Something I've seen just on social media is that Chad Gable's contract sounds like it's coming up very soon. I don't have details on it right now.
This Friday.
This Friday is what's
That's what Fightful Select last reported, but obviously we'll get to Gable here soon. That was as of a couple of days ago. They said it was this upcoming Friday. Whether or not he's, you know, re-signed or whether they're on a handshake deal, what have you, we'll talk about.
That's why I was hesitant to bring it up because it sure doesn't seem like he's going anywhere. But we will talk about that in just a little bit. I want to talk about merchandise though.
There's a song there. Signs everywhere. Signs. So we'll talk about it later.
Again. I thought you were gonna go sign, seal, delivered.
No, not yet.
But. We talk about things that signing contracts. Merchandise obviously is a big deal when it comes to signing contracts and where you're at. Jey Uso may have sold more merchandise in WWE than Cody Rhodes in May of 2024. So that's obviously huge news because Cody Rhodes, biggest star in the company right now. Wrestling has provided some pretty iconic merchandise over the year, guys. I think that I want to take a moment for us to chat a little bit about merchandise. This is where I want the chat to get involved. I want the comments to get involved and just talk about some of our favorite pieces of wrestling merch, maybe whether they were big duds, whether they're like, this is silly, or whether they were great. What were some of yours? This is very generic, but I am a huge NWO fan. That was like my favorite thing in the world, the NWO. So getting the old black and white NWO shirt was something I was very excited about getting, and like I wore very proudly to have that. It's again, it's kind of the easy one. HWO, what is it?
Oh yeah, Head World Order.
Head World Order. Okay, that's right. That's right. Jimmy, what was some of your favorite merch you've seen? You've obviously had up close and personal.
Man, I've got a collection down in storage where, you know, my wife is just saying, we got to get rid of some of this stuff. If you've got a second, there's stuff in my room here, but I've got calendars, I've got t-shirts, I've got hats out the wazoo. It's just ridiculous. But for some reason, the simple ones resonated with me the most. The stuff like the Austin 316, you know, I'll just whoop your ass and stuff like that. And then the Owen one later, where it said Owen 316, I just broke your neck. You know, kind of stuff like that was kind of cool. I like that. I remember the old one. It resonates with me still to this day because that was the stuff I grew up on, Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, the Wahoo McDaniel when he got his leg broken by Greg the Hammer Valentine. I do have that t-shirt. I just got to go dig it out somewhere where it says, I broke Wahoo's leg. You know, that stuff.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Of course, Taker stuff and all the different other ones from the pay-per-views and stuff like that. But the individual ones, believe it or not, I have an Edge shirt where it's the Brood one with the symbol, with the Brood symbol on it. I don't know. Where do I begin? One of my favorites, though, is my WrestleMania 6 shirt with Hogan and Ultimate Warrior on the front and stuff like that.
I had this great Roddy Piper shirt. It was a total knockoff, like not official merchandise, but it was the picture of Roddy Piper on it. And every time I wore it, someone would comment and I'd get into a conversation about wrestling with that person. So I loved it, but eventually I wore it too much. It no longer survives. But Justin, what's some of your favorite wrestling merch over the years?
Yeah, I mean, as you said, the original Austin 316, the original, I mean, God, when you wore the original NWO black and white, I mean, that was like a status in the 90s of having that, you know, the original DX with the two words. I have some of these. I get a kick out of the first APA shirt with the back where it says, don't take this ass whooping personally. it's over in the closet over there. It is a from the Reliant Astrodome. It's the WrestleMania 17 official event shirt, and it's pretty cool because it's Austin and Rock. And if you, it's a black cotton t-shirt, but if you rotate it the right way in the light, if you rotate it the right way, the Brahma Bull and the Smoking Skull are kind of like a hologram in the back of the shirt. So that's pretty cool. Awesome. One piece of merchandise I was always jealous I didn't have. Man, my best friend at the time, he got it. His parents paid for it and did it. He and I are both big Shawn Michaels fans. I can't remember WWE doing this prior to this. Was after WrestleMania 12, the gimmick they did from the Iron Man match is they cut up the ring canvas, because remember that WrestleMania canvas was not your typical just plain blue canvas. It was blue, but it had the WrestleMania and 12 actually logo into it, faded into it. One of the very few times you'd ever see WWE put anything on the ring mat. And they cut the mat up, and if you called and you paid, you got this plaque that was the big picture of Shawn Michaels and the boyhood dream coming true. And they had a square piece of the mat that they put in there, and you got a certain authenticity. It's a plaque that he had hung on his. I was always so jealous every time I went over, he had it. And if you turn the light and hit the mat the right way, there's a tiny piece of like glowing sweat that you could see that was on the stain of the canvas. It was pretty cool. I was always jealous of that. That 1996 collector's item.
I have a similar one right there behind me with Eddie Guerrero from WrestleMania 20 in New York.
That's such a cool piece of memorabilia. That's such a great idea to do. In the chat, we got I Am Air saying NWO Wolfpack shirt. I was always team black and white, but I get you. Wolfpack was very cool. Zook Enigma said, by the way, thanks for joining us live again. Zook Enigma says, rated R superstar lips. James Winter with the Job Squad shirt. Reaper Brink, I just got my Cornette face shirt. Dylan saying 316 was a classic. Baby Ice, the NWO, of course. CM Punk Nexus shirt from Sean. That's a good one, too. Classic Austin shirt. Edge's Rated R. Lots of good stuff. James Winter got a classic Headbangers t-shirt in a box somewhere. That's a cool one to have. All those ones that are like, I think the best ones now are like the ones that like weren't as popular, but you're like, oh my God, that one. I forgot about that one. Or stuff like that are always great to see now.
If you want to see some deep cut on wrestling t-shirts, especially like WCW in the 90s, my buddy Juice Springsteen, who I've talked about, who I've done to do stuff with me, His account, I think it's on Instagram. I think it's Juicy's Wrestling Closet, or it's either Juicy or Juice's Wrestling Closet. He has some deep cuts from the W that I didn't even know ever existed in WCW. I'm talking about like event shirt, like whatever he's searched far and wide and paid some money for. So if you really want to go down a wormhole of merchandise, check out Juice's Wrestling Closet and leave a comment. Tell him I sent you.
I might go check that out. That sounds fun. My last thing on this will be to talk about the NWO shirt. I always said something that I thought made the NWO so special, the NWO shirts. I think one of the reasons they're so popular is when you wear like a Four Horsemen shirt or a DX shirt, you're wearing another team's shirt. Mm-hmm. But with the NWO, when you put on the shirt, you were NWO. You're NWO for life. And it felt like you were, because everyone was in the NWO. So it felt like I'm the NWO. We're all NWO. And it actually felt very inclusive wearing the shirt. And I always thought that was a weird thing that no other group really has been able to do that same way. And I feel like that's always been one of the things that made that shirt so special, at least to me. That's how I looked at it. I felt like I was part of the NWO.
one last shirt that I got to talk to about is one of my favorites, because I used to wear it when we were setting up the ring and stuff like that. And it was the Un-American shirt.
And oh, yeah.
And of course, I used to get heat from everybody. Take that shirt off. What the heck? You know,
I love the Un-Americans, my guy. Lance Storm.
There you go.
Bret Hart glasses, of course. Hacksaw Jim Duggan 2x4. Oh, and the Road Warrior shoulder pads. Road Warrior shoulder pads. I've said before, man, I would, if I had time travel, I would find a way to get some Bret Hart glasses. That's what I'd use it for. Not saving the world. Nope. None of that. Just getting me some authentic Bret Hart sunglasses. Dave, speaking of good sales and things and the big stars of the day, Dave Meltzer says Cody Rhodes is WWE's biggest babyface since the Austin Rock era. And I'm sure this is going to ruffle a few feathers. I want everyone's thoughts on in the chat about whether or not you think Cody Rhodes is the biggest babyface since the Austin Rock era. Justin, now I saw him tweet this out, and he was saying if you compare 1 year to 1 year, and look at things that way. But what are your thoughts on Dave Meltzer saying Cody Rhodes, biggest baby face since Austin Rock?
Well, I think he's saying it because he's judging certain metrics. And so that's impressive. That's the case. Of course, you know, we are seeing a resurgence in pro wrestling, especially with WWE's business, and more people are starting to watch. It's starting to become cool again, but cool again for all ages. So you're not losing the young fan base, but you are, I think, you know, getting some adults back into it. That's a tough statement to make because, I mean, look, and Cody's popularity is surging, but even though it was in during a quote-unquote downtime in the business, especially for WWE, you can't just overlook John Cena. You just can't overlook John. He turned himself in to a household name. I mean, like, I put it in perspective, I have a 9-year-old, and she will say John Cena or scream John Cena, and the kids at school will say it, or the kids online will say it, or whatever. And even though she probably necessarily couldn't even always pick John Cena out of a lineup, she knows that name is something cool or means something. Now, she did for the first time, and she does not really watch wrestling with me. This is not being fed by me. She did actually for the first time say something. She said the name Cody Rhodes. Again, speaking to Cody is starting to get himself into that, like, that conversation of where even if kids aren't watching, they know that that's somebody important because their friend watches or the friend's older brother watches or whatever. So, look, Cody's absolutely, you know, arguably the hottest name in pro wrestling today, but it's a blurry statement to say that he's the biggest baby face since Austin Rock and just to completely skip over John Cena. It depends on what conversation you want to have. If anything, you can argue the fact that John Cena has become the biggest star that as big of a star as he was during a time when viewership declined so much in pro wrestling, but he was still able to bring eyes on the product, get himself into Hollywood, be relevant, and keep that crossover going. So, I also saw some clip where Dave was arguing with his co-host, and I agreed with his co-host, and they were arguing about an AEW match, and his co-host couldn't figure out who was the heel, who was the face, and Dave said, it doesn't matter who's the heel, and I just did the Naked Gun slap on my forehead. If I can't believe you just said it doesn't matter who the heel is.
Jimmy, I feel like I get what he's saying. If you want to take year after year and look at certain metrics, I get that. And I guess that's a fair way to do it if that's how you want to do it. I personally believe you can't. Cody's only been the world champ for 2 months. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's just been, you need a bigger stretch of time to be able to look back on before you can start making claims like they're the biggest and the best, because otherwise you could say, you know, CM Punk's only had one match and look at how much merchandise he's sold. Yeah. I mean, how do you start quantifying that kind of stuff? So I get what he's saying, and I feel like it's a nice spicy take, but I also feel like it's, I don't know, a little unfair. What about you?
I don't know about unfair, but I think it's a little too soon to make that call, in my opinion, because like you guys said, it hasn't been that long since he's been back with WWE. And yes, he caught fire because there was that big transition. The man, he's coming from AEW over to WWE, and we haven't seen any big signings, you know, go and cross that way. Everybody was going the other way. So it was a big deal to everybody. And for someone like John Cena, who, like you said, Justin, he just transcended everything. Here's a guy who did more make-a-wishes than, or still does too, than anybody on the planet. Nobody has done more make-a-wish appearances or, you know, stuff. The guy's just incredible. And how long did he do it for? How many years was he on top? How many years was he a babyface? Even when they were doing the dueling chants, let's go Cena sucks stuff, he was still hugely over as a babyface, no matter what. And when the music hit, they cheered. And then they almost felt like they were programmed to do the dueling chants, that sort of thing. But that's kind of off topic. But as far as Cody goes, again, he's hugely over. And it's tough to do in a day and age today where you get a white meat babyface like Cody Rhodes, dressed nicely and that sort of, in wearing the suit and all that sort of stuff, to be universally loved the way he is. He resonates with children. And that's the big thing. And I know people say, well, the PG era, that's what they were trying to do. This isn't the PG era, but at the same time, where the older crowd is looking for something edgier in their baby faces. They want something more Austin-esque or Rock-esque in their baby faces. Cody's not that. He's the abnormality in 2024 that actually works in this day and age, where you got that guy that is universally loved by children and teenagers and young adults, and everybody's on board. Not absolutely everybody, you know, they're going to be the haters out there, of course, like everybody, but it's not enough time to make that call yet. I think, is he on his way there? If that momentum keeps going, sure, then you have a better argument, but right now I don't think the argument holds water.
I want to mention the Make-A-Wish thing, because I think it's so incredible. I just Googled it while we were talking about it. Google is saying he's done 650 Make-A-Wishes. And so I decided to do another quick Google. If we assume that he's been wrestling since the year 2000, which I think is being pretty generous considering he wasn't a big star. He wasn't doing Make-A-Wishes in 2000. But if you did 24 years, 650, that means he's doing over 2 Make-A-Wishes a month for the past 24 years. That's like every 2 weeks for 24 years doing a Make-A-Wish. That's crazy how many he's done. Crazy. And I don't know. That's just awesome. I don't know. I feel like you got to give flowers to a guy for doing that many. It's awesome.
Definitely.
Justin, the last thing I want to say is with Cena, everyone wanted to see him turn heel. Do you think Cody should do that at some point?
Well, that'll eventually happen. That's just, I mean, that'll, you know, there was a point where you probably should have, from a creative standpoint, you probably should have turned Cena heel officially. And Cena's talked about that was in the works, new music, new gear, everything. And Vince just wouldn't let it happen because of the merch sales and just how popular he was as a fit, you know, whatever. So, but I think, you know, under, again, new creative regime, everything, at some point, probably years down the line, Cody will turn heel. Maybe he's aligned with Paul Heyman. I don't know. But yeah, it'll happen eventually, because you're going to get everything you can get creatively out of him as a babyface. And then it's going to be time to change it up. And you're going to feel like maybe you have the next babyface in line to help make. So it'll eventually happen. I think even before that, though, while Cody is still a babyface, I think he's joked and even alluded to it that he wants to get a match with Cena. But I think he versus Cena, I could see that being a sexy Saudi Arabia marquee match that they throw out one of those shows and can kind of like bill it as like a little bit of like a passing the torch, a little face versus face. You won't have a conflicted crowd. That Saudi crowd will just be, they'll just play along. But I think as long, I think that's something we'll get before Cena. I know he talked about on the Pat McAfee show or whenever, when he did the media around Mania time, I know he talked about his schedule and maybe coming back next year, maybe one more good run. I could see that good run being getting a one-on-one with Cody.
And Rocky said someone tried to ask ChatGPT who the biggest baby face who is the biggest baby face in WWE. I did that and they said Hulk Hogan. So take that for what it's worth. That's a good Hulk Hogan. He was, I mean, yeah. Good answer. One last thing before we get to the show. Matt Cardona is out here talking about WWE's Drew McIntyre and said that he paved the way for Drew McIntyre, alluding to how he's been the internet champion since 2011, and he compares Drew McIntyre's use of social media to fuel his rivalry now with CM Punk and others. Jimmy, where do you rank Drew McIntyre in the hierarchy of wrestlers using social media these days, or in the history of social media?
As far as today goes, he's one of the best to do it. I don't know if he ranks it. I don't do rankings from 1 to 5. I maybe pick a top five, but that Matt Cardona is definitely.
That is 1 through 5. What do you?
No, but you know what I mean. Not in any particular order. Let's put it that way.
I don't do a 1 through 5. I just do a top 5.
He just throws them all into a bucket.
Yeah, it's like
giving you a hard time.
Here's 5 guys. Throw it in there. But no, man, the guy's using social media to his full potential. It's something that is very difficult to do because everybody thinks they can do it. Everybody thinks they can go out there and just say, hey, I could do some goofy stuff on Twitter or whatever on Instagram and get people to follow. No, you got to be very creative and get people involved. And Drew is very creative in how he does it. He doesn't break character. He comes off like he does on television, on all his social media accounts, which is very, you know, which is very good because a lot of people, you know, who are heels nowadays, they'll go out there and they'll be friendly and they act like they would in front of their family or in front of their friends, as opposed to saying, you know what, I'm this is how I am on television. This is how I'm portrayed. Social media is a weird place anyways. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be that character on social media. And Drew does it brilliantly. And Matt Cardona does it very well too. Look, he's making a hell of a living on the independent circuit. He's writing his own ticket basically using that. So, you know, good on him. If you can do that, that's amazing. And keep going, and more people should take notes from these guys because who's that other guy that I think is doing it? Is it Grayson Waller?
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's getting that snarky attitude on social media, and people are going, oh, you know what? I can't stand this guy. Yep. Job mission accomplished. There you go. So, you know, those are a couple of guys. And I think Drew right now, everything he's doing right now is very, very engaging and entertaining, and I'm enjoying it.
You know who I think is the best, who's been the best at it of all time, and who now I think is also knocking out of the park? Bray Wyatt originally, and now the Uncle Howdy gang, and they're getting people to, I don't know if you count this because there's stuff incorporated into the show, but whenever something happens with them, the internet lights up. We're doing puzzles. We're trying to figure out what they're doing. We're doing half the work ourselves writing this story. They're not even on TV. It's all powered by social media. But Justin, who's your social media? Who are your top 5?
Oh, I don't have a 5, but I mean, yeah, I agree with Matt Cardona paved the way for almost literally everybody. I mean, he really jumped on, you know, on Twitter and on YouTube and doing his own show and you know, and getting himself booked because of it before anybody else could. I mean, I think it's interesting that I don't have the quote in front of me, but I think it's interesting that he makes a point to compare and, you know, take some credit for Drew McIntyre, because again, there's a lot of people that I think that have taken from the Matt Cardona, Zack Ryder playbook over the years, but for him to specifically highlight Drew McIntyre, who of course is very over right now doing it, but also I'm always in my back of my mind thinking, ooh, was Matt Cardona plotting for a, you know, has he had enough fun on his independent run? You know, is there another stay in WWE? Is he starting something with Drew McIntyre by saying this? So yeah, we'll see. But yeah, obviously Matt Cardona, Zack Ryder, yeah, was the first internet champion as it comes to pro wrestling.
Yeah, I think clearly the first and the biggest influencer across the board there. Someone who's been an influencer online to Wrestling Inc. has been you guys, the fans and the viewers and the listeners. I want to say I appreciate you all for being here. And because of what you guys have said, we have started covering PLEs and pay-per-views on the weekend. And so I wanted you all to know that on June 9th, we return to cover NXT Battleground. Jack Farmer and George Hermosa, hey, I'm one of those guys, will be covering Battleground after it goes off the air. So make sure to tune in, make sure to show up, because if you don't, we might take it away from you. So you got to show up, and you got to be there, and you got to turn out in big numbers like you are tonight, by the way, seeing Joe C. lurking and Blue Chew, Dylan Matthews, Scotty Karma, Team Lurk, Gabriel Sanchez, Daniel Berry, Rob Mowring, Ethan Cruz. Lots of you here today. I can't get through all of you. I apologize. But Tut Graff, Adonde, Laura Rock, James Winter, Big John, Tony Hayes, Rocky Secular Belt, everybody. D Walker, appreciate y'all coming through. We got to get to the show. We're 40 minutes in. We got to talk about Raw at some point on this show. Let's start. We're going to cover a whole bunch of Judgment Day. I'm going to start with the first chunk of the night, and then we'll end with the last chunk of the night. We start with Liv Morgan and Dom Mysterio in the ring. Liv Morgan welcomes us to the Liv Morgan Revenge Tour. She reminds us that she put Becky into retirement and she kissed Dom. Dom comes out and he gets booed like crazy. Liv says, "Mommy, killing both of them will be totally worth it." And then Finn spoils the party and says Judgment Day doesn't want her there. And she says, "Dom."
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Does later in the night, they also get close, but Finn Balor shoos away Liv Morgan. Justin, talk to me about this opening segment, Liv and Dom, and your thoughts about everything that's going on with them. And do you think Dom walked to the back imitating Ron Burgundy saying, "Don't act like you're not impressed"?
I mean, look, this was a great way to start the show. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat, and it felt like all of the crowd in Hershey was like, I mean, so Liv comes out and they're ready to boo her. And then as soon as Dom music hits, everybody, I mean, like, I can't remember the last time that WWE truly had a soap opera that everybody is all lean into and interested in. I mean, we've seen some attempts over the years, you know, some worse than others on, you know, them trying to manufacture love angles. You know, I go to Rusev and Lana breaking up and let's bring in Bobby, or let's bring in Summer Rae or Dolph or whoever. But this one, everybody feels like, it feels like everybody's like so invested, because they're invested and they hate Dom. They're invested in that they now hate Liv, and they're mad at Liv that she injured Rhea, and they all love Rhea, and Rhea's with Dom, which nobody likes because she shouldn't be with Dom. And now Dom, like, the dynamic is awesome. So this was a great way to start. It was a thread throughout the show. This is going to come to a spectacular explosion at some point when Rhea can step back in the fold, and it's going to be, there's going to be just pops and reactions that I think are going to go down in history that we're going to be talking about for years on end.
And I am totally okay with Dom Mysterio being caught in the crossfire. It's totally perfect. Jimmy, I want your thoughts on this. I love how Justin summed it up as this a soap opera that we're all totally into. Mm-hmm. I want your thoughts on that. I also want your thoughts on Finn Balor. He gets a win over Dragon Lee tonight. He also just signed a new contract fairly recently. So one, is it time to buy stock in Finn Balor? And two, you'll notice he's the one shooing away Liv Morgan. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing the divide in Judgment Day a little differently than maybe we originally thought it would be?
Yeah, I kind of thought that at the same time, because, you know, it was Damian Priest who seemed to be the one who was kind of distancing himself away from everybody. "Look, I don't need your help. I don't need your help. I don't need your help." But now it's Finn Balor who's trying to kind of keep the glue together, but it's not really working, because you can see Dominic, he looks so conflicted, every time Liv Morgan comes close, it's almost like he's got that do I or don't I, and you know,
fair.
Yeah, and it's working. You're right, Justin. It is working. It's got people going, no, but still, it's Dom getting that reaction that he's getting when he came out to address Liv from the beginning. Couldn't get his words out because they wouldn't let him speak. I love the fact that he's still that heel, but at the same time, all the pieces are coming together for them to fall apart, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Jimmy, do you think the booing will become a problem with Dom as they try to tell stories? Will it be kind of like a what chant, almost stepping on him trying to actually get promos out, or is it still a good thing?
Now, it's a good thing for now, but I'm worried that it's going to be the programmed response as opposed to them reacting naturally with natural heat. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. Here's Dom. We're supposed to boo.
Yeah.
I don't want that to happen. I want it to happen organically. And him messing over mommy and, hooking up with Liv could keep that natural heel momentum going.
Yeah. Justin, I've got a couple quick ones for you. One, is Finn Balor being a good friend or a bad friend?
He's being a good friend because he's keeping Dom from doing too much more. It is really going to get himself killed from Rhea. I think it is interesting. The big picture here, though, is that, like, and again, I know we'll get to it here in a moment, so I'm not trying to jump ahead on you, Jack, but it's like we also have the Priest situation where mm-hmm. we know Priest is going to take on Drew mm-hmm. at the PLE, and Drew is very much a top heel. And so it's interesting. It's almost like we finally are seeing the start of potentially Dom being excommunicated from Judgment Day, because they're like, whoa, like we don't want to be part of none of this. And Dom is the one part of Judgment Day that you just can't cheer. You know, even JD, you kind of just can maybe just cheer him because he's just the goof that just, he's the lackey with the big head that gets beat up. And you can cheer Finn because Finn's cool, and you can cheer Priest because he's a champion. He's cool. So it's almost like they are like in dual storyline with the Dom situation here, and then with the Priest building to his match with Drew. They're slowly trying to train the audience to look, it's okay to cheer Priest, Finn, and maybe even JD just by whatever. But yeah, make sure you boo Dom and let's start to separate Dom from them. It kind of feels like they're in some type of shift that they're trying to do and accomplish overall with Judgment Day for several reasons, you know. So I think that's interesting storytelling that they're trying to pull off right now.
Yeah, lots of moving parts that do seem to be moving in the same direction. Jimmy, what were your thoughts on the main event? Damian Priest, world champion, facing Rey Mysterio. And how did you feel they executed the end there with Drew McIntyre and the Judgment Day battling it out?
I kind of expected a little bit of a schmoz to go on in the end, and it's always difficult because everybody's seen pretty much everything when it comes to run-ins and aftermath and distractions during the match. I'm glad that it wasn't like a full-on distraction of the referee, because mm-hmm. that's happening far too often lately. I like the fact that it was like white noise outside the ring that was a distraction as opposed to what happened. But I got to tell you that I like the fact that, I don't know how to put it into words. I like the fact that, again, like I said, it wasn't a referee distraction, and Damian did look good in that win against a legend like Rey Mysterio. And it was the classic David and Goliath story. Mm-hmm. And Rey is a master at fighting from underneath and gaining sympathy. I thought the crowd was kind of a little quiet. I don't know if they were burnt out or they were just expecting something to happen and waiting for it and not thinking that Dom would win the match. You know, sometimes people try to overthink and overanalyze, saying, oh, this is a little too predictable going into it. But at the same time, I thought the match was fine. I thought the execution was okay. I just, again, when you talk about a lot of moving parts, there were a lot of moving parts during the finish.
I think of the crowd, because I think the crowd was thinking at least what I was thinking is something's going to happen. Like you said, a schmoz. And I think a lot of us were just kind of waiting. What's it going to be? Is it going to be Judgment Day getting involved? Is it going to be someone running out? Like, so I think a lot of us were just kind of like, we were waiting for it to happen as opposed to enjoying the show. And then, oh, look what happened.
But the other surprise with Drew coming out afterwards was actually, I thought that was done really well.
Justin, who do you think, are you worried that I felt like I didn't know who the good guy or the bad guy was at the end there with Judgment Day jumping on Drew McIntyre, but Drew McIntyre clearly not someone you are supposed to cheer for.
Well, that's so they're in, again, they're in a really, this is a unique situation because again, you can make a case for starting again to try to maybe make Judgment Day a little more good guy, especially if they are like discard dirty cheating Dom. Mm-hmm. You also don't need to have Priest and Judgment Day be that traditional of a good guy, because remember, Priest is going to take on Drew in Scotland. So at that PLE to that live crowd, Drew is going to be a hero, and they are going to be booing all over Priest. So basically, here's what I would say: you're fine with that. You know that dynamic's going to be, and that's that. If Priest is still going to retain the world title, which LaBar prediction spoiler, I think he will. If Priest is still going to SummerSlam to take on Gunther, then I do think you have a possible, again, task until August, till SummerSlam, to turn Priest more babyface. But in terms of leading up to Clash here in a week and a half, you're expecting Priest to be booed out of the building because he's going against the native son. So it's a weird dynamic that you got to kind of balance right now of what you're doing.
I loved it. I was like, yeah, this is anarchy. It's crazy. I love it. People fighting all over the place. So I was totally into it. And I love that. I thought Drew McIntyre was just going to stand tall. I liked that Damian Priest turned it because I was like, oh, surprise. Different. Mm-hmm. Enjoyed it. I enjoyed the end. Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable. Well, not versus Chad Gable, but that's how I labeled it in notes. Sami says that he hasn't been able to enjoy being the champ because of Chad Gable. The Alpha Academy comes out instead of Chad Gable, and Maxine reads a note that reminds us all of the bad times they've all been through, and Sami grants Chad Gable a title shot. Sami tries to talk some sense to Alpha Academy, and Chad attacks Sami from behind. Chad then yells at the Alpha Academy and makes Maxine beg when Otis gets in Gable's face, but it's Sami Zayn who attacks Gable before bumping Otis, causing him to bump Akira and Maxine, and Otis hits the world's strongest slam on Zayn, carrying Maxine and Akira away while Gable holds the IC title. Later, Gable thinks it's all part of the plan. That was a mouthful, Justin, but I thought this was, I was enthralled in this whole thing. Talk me through it. I love this.
Yeah, up and down the card, they have people invested. They have the crowd invested in up and down in these stories. It's awesome. I mean, the pop that Otis got when he stepped in between Gable and Maxine and Tozawa, God, it might have been the loudest pop of the night, at least across on the TV, the way it came across. So there's something there. There's something there. This has to be paid off in more ways than one. You got to have, Gable's going to have a match against Zayn. You eventually got to have Otis stand up for himself and for the group. You're still seeing Chad Gable in the background talking to the Creed brothers, so that lets me think that, like, he's already got his next Alpha Academy cadets lined up. So I mean, there's a lot here, all amidst the questions of his contract. So, but I refuse to think Triple H is putting this much, he's got this much invested, all centered around Chad Gable, if there's not a belief that he, and not a real sure feeling, if not even a verbal handshake, that hey, we're gonna make something happen, we're keeping you here long term. Because Chad Gable is right now is one of the hottest heels on a very deep Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, going back to the contract talks, I mean, if you're doing this much stuff, you would I would imagine any company would have to offer you insane money to give up what you're doing and where you're at if you're Chad Gable. And that's not a shot at any other company. It's just, I mean, you're one of the featured players on their biggest program, and you're probably getting paid pretty good because it's WWE. So you'd have to be making, like I said, crazy money to want to walk away from that. But I don't know. Chad Gable has his own things he might be working on. But Jimmy, this, like I said, this, having Maxine read the note, I felt was such a brilliant move. I thought it was just gut-wrenching hearing her say these things. And the fact that they were all real things, it was like, oh yeah, they did have to do that stuff until they met Chad Gable. Just brilliantly executed. And I want it to be known, Akira Tozawa stepped up first. I think Otis got all the cheer, but Akira Tozawa, he was the first one to stand up to Chad Gable. We need to start cheering for our guy, Akira Tozawa. I think it's time to put our foot down.
Well, it's easier to cheer for Otis because it's easier. It's Tozawa is a mouthful for Jen's fans to chant. But you're right that Maxine reading the note and the way she was reading it, like she had to, and she kind of felt a little down reading it. It wasn't with conviction, which was a good thing. And I love the fact that it didn't play out all the way today, where you thought everybody's seeing Otis, he's being, you know, he's questioning, should I or shouldn't I? Should I stand up to him? Should I not stand up to him? Should I listen to Sammy? Should I not listen to Sammy? And it looked like he was going to go that route, and then they flipped it on everybody. And they had that little collision there, and of course, Chad blaming Sammy for it, and a World's Strongest Slam, I guess, or another homage to Mark Henry, one on SmackDown and one against
me. That's what I call it.
That's what it'll always be to me. It's like calling it, whatever, the Canadian Destroyer. It's not going to be, you know, a North American Destroyer, anyway. You know what I mean? So, but I like that they're not giving it away too soon, and they're having a match with Otis versus Sammy next week, as they advertise, again, to get you engaged. And now I'm curious to see how that goes and how it plays out and how Chad Gable reacts to whatever the finish is going to be in that match.
I think it also shows how smart WWE is creatively as well, because it would have been very easy for them to just keep dragging out the, is he going to leave Chad Gable? Is he going to leave Chad Gable and just drag it out? But now that they had that bump, as simple as it was, now it gives Otis a reason to still not like Sami Zayn, instead of just being like, I still don't know. You know, now we're like, okay, that reason to not like Sami has been reinvigorated a little bit. But I think it's smart. It's a little thing, but it makes it feel less burnt out as we move on. Bianca and Jade took on Baszler and Stark in a tag team match. Sonya was talking to Baszler and Stark backstage. Both teams want a match for the titles, so Adam Pearce makes it official. We get a tag team title match, playa. Before Bianca and Jade can get the win, Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn come out and attack the champs, and it turns into a 4-on-2 beatdown, with the four sharing uneasy looks with each other. Later, Dawn and Fyre say they want their shot at Clash of the Castle. Justin, I like where they went with this, but I was a little frustrated that two people lost a shot at the tag team championships because of an outside interference, and they were cool with it.
What happened tonight is trying to set up and let you see, okay, here's all the tag team women's tag team challengers you have, and trying to line up this gauntlet, line up this division of challengers for Bianca and Jade. I get that point to Shayna and Zoe losing, and they just feel, oh, okay, fine. This is just because Bianca and Jade are such studs and stars. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to the other four, but even when I see those other four out there getting the numbers game, but when I see, okay, they're my challenge, like, I'm like, I don't believe nor think at all that they're going to ever in a 1-on-1 straight up. We're not 1-on-1. On a straight up tag match, going to beat Bianca and Jay. Like, Bianca and Jay just looks so dominant, just so physically superb. These four ladies just don't come across as they're not going to do it. So that's a tough spot when you have two athletes that are stars like Bianca and Jade. Is that it's going to be very hard to give me a real credible, you know, enemy to them. So
I think that's why I like that the four, I like where they went, because it's gonna take like a 4-on-2 situation. I'm not gonna believe any team is beating them 2-on-2 at this point. It reminds me of it. Of course, it didn't go quite the way it was supposed to, but the two-man power trip thing, where it's like, no one's beating Triple H and Stone Cold together. Are you crazy? That team's never losing the title, or never losing. Wait, were they tag titles? Or were they just Intercontinental? And I can't remember, but you get the point. But Jimmy, I agree with Justin. I think that Bianca and Jade, they've elevated those titles, having them, but now it's like WWE has their work cut out for them in making tag teams feel like legitimate contenders.
Yeah, that's the thing right now. Like you guys said, they look like a indestructible, unbeatable team right now. And the challenge right now is to make them feel like there is a risk of them losing the championship in any match. And, you know, it's, again, it's difficult when you build up a team that much, like they've built up Bianca and Jade, to find another team, especially as babyfaces, to find another team. It's easier for massive destructive heels to be that way, because you can build up a babyface and there's always hope. Mm-hmm. Because you want to hope for the babyface to be able to defeat these teams. But when you're a babyface team with that much indestructible force, you can't get behind the heel team to want to beat them, if that makes any kind of sense. You know, because you're not going to cheer for the heels. Oh, I want to see these babyfaces lose. No, you want to see the babyfaces overcome the heels in that kind of situation. So that is why I think it's going to be more challenging for them to find a team that's going to be a viable threat to them in the fans' eyes.
Jimmy, to that point, I think, you know, I'm not saying just give up on all the other women that are potentials to be tag teams to beat them, but it might come to where the office realizes the only real credible, believable, and interesting way to dethrone Bianca and Jade is just to start to have turmoil between the two of them at some point to build to an eventual one-on-one match, which I know we all want to see. But that might be the only way that you get the titles off of them. It's just they implode amongst themselves. I don't know if there's a pairing out there in WWE right now that's going to be super believable to dethrone them naturally.
No, I hear you. But the big question is, which one would it be? If you do owe that route, that's the question.
JT says Nia and Tiffany are the only ones who could challenge them. Beer Money says Tiffany and Charlotte are the team to beat them in 6 months. Interesting choices. But yeah, it's 6 months is a long time of seeing two superheroes run over civilians before, you know what I mean? Again, with all due respect to the women's tag team division, it's just, that's a tough one.
Oh, the humanity.
Yeah, I mean, those two, they are just superstars. When they're out in the ring, you just see it. Like, these two are absolute superstars. We had another tag team match, AOP versus New Day. Karrion Kross and the New Day share some words before about stabbing each other in the back. The match breaks down when Kofi tries to confront Karrion Kross, and that led to Woods having no one to tag, and then he got pinned. Justin, they've been in this situation before, but is now the time New Day breaks up?
I don't know if they're going to break up, but I'm enjoying this. And maybe it's because I have been wanting to like the Final Testament a lot more. I've been wanting to find them interesting. I've always been a fan of Cross and Scarlett. AOP feels like one of those, like, Triple H said 5 years ago, I'm going to make them a star, damn it, and he's going to see that through, whether the people want it or not. You will play golf today, and you will like it. You will cheer AOP today, and you will like it. But in all seriousness, I do like this. I like this story. I like Cross, you know, hovering around the corner these last few, hover around the ice cream truck a week or two ago and to Woods. And like, I like this, and I like that he's putting the, it's an interesting story. I want to see where it goes, and it was a good win for AOP tonight. So I don't know if this is the time. I don't know if this is going to be the actual split of New Day. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, Cross is trying to recruit Woods, saying that Kofi has had his time and pass, and there's going to be a swerve, and maybe it's Kofi who he actually gets that joins him. You know, I don't know what it could be, but I'm interested. I was interested in this match and this entire segment to see how the story played out. So good on creative, for creative has something for you. And they're giving us something here.
Jimmy, Nick in the chat has given us a super chat and has been super patient. So shout out to Nick. Says, random question, but who has a better chance of being WWE or world champion, Karrion Kross or Andrade?
If I had to choose between the two right now, it would be Karrion Kross. I think he's got, he's in their wheelhouse, for lack of a better term. And he's a great talker. We saw that he's able to talk. He's got the look and he's got the backup, which is another thing that's important if you want to be a heel champion. Yes, I know there are a lot of factions out there and that sort of thing, but it works still. It works still. If he can, he looks like a guy that doesn't need the help, but if he gets the help, he's going to take advantage of it anyway. So that's what heels do. So I think he would be the guy.
Hey, Roman, Triple H, a lot of folks didn't look like they needed the help, but they still got it. That's what made them such bad guys.
Right.
I'd agree. I think Karrion Kross, he's already got momentum to a degree. He's got the group. He's on TV. He's doing things. Andrade is still trying to find his footing. on what he's doing in WWE. So I would take Karrion Kross also. I don't.
Kross is also just a better promo. So
yeah. Well, that's true. He right. So Karrion Kross across the board. Across the board. Jey Uso and Lyra Valkyria both say they want to win the Money in the Bank this year. Except Lyra got assaulted by Io Shirai in the process. Jimmy, first is Bron Breakker running through people. Then it's now it's Io Shirai. What the heck is going on backstage? And how do you like our first two entrants into Money in the Bank?
Boy, there's some anger management issues going on backstage. But Io Shirai, I like this. I like the fire. I like to see a different side of these of her. And, you know, hey, if it works, it works. You know what I mean? It's different from it's a different presentation for the women. Let's put it that way. And that's what I appreciate from that. And, you know, if you're going to get heat on somebody, get heat on the nice new girl. That's for sure. And as far as Jey Uso goes, I like it. They've gone to that that spot now where he's coming out through the crowd, through the yeet lights. The so yeet cool. flies is that what we can call them now? Yeet the yeet flies. I don't know.
Ugh, that sounds like you don't want to see those around.
But you know, the cool little homage to Bret Hart. You talked about the Bret Hart sunglasses earlier, where he gave the kid the sunglasses and all that sort of stuff. So
if you got yeet flies, you probably need to switch some things up.
All right. Oh man. Guess what's going to be trending tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen?
I got a bad case of the yeet flies, guys.
Boy, I don't know what I drank, but wow, man, that gave me yeet flies.
I don't know where she's been, but I... Oh, never mind.
Oh, jeez, Louise.
Going off the rails on a crazy train. Yeah.
So, Justin, that said, outside of the yeet flies, who else would you like to see in Money in the Bank this year?
Bron Breakker. Bron Breakker. Because if anybody could spear a yeet fly, it's Bron Breakker. You just bark at it.
Yeah, I hope he's got some gloves so he doesn't catch yeet flies.
I feel like we need Manscaped right now to clean up the yeet flies. They're not here with us anymore.
Oh, jeez, Louise. Well, speaking of Bron Breakker, he had a match with Ricochet today. We got some backstage promos, but Bron basically rolls over Ricochet, gives Samantha Irvin some dirty looks. And then he's about to murder Ricochet on the outside before Dragunov shows up, and he almost gets murdered with some steel steps for the work he puts in. Justin, thoughts on Bron Breakker and thoughts on Samantha Irvin being a little bit involved here?
Well, I like it. There was actually also a social video that WWE posted throughout the week. They did a split screen where they showed Samantha Irvin last Monday, just a close up on her sitting at her chair, and then the other screen was Bron sneaking in to spear Ricochet and her reaction. I mean, and she's so animated with such great reactions and emotional anyways. And then of course it's her husband. I don't mind it. I mean, again, if the world knows, if you're a couple and you're public on social media and WWE's fine with acknowledging it, like it makes sense because WWE's all about selling emotion. So you have an extra real life person who's going to sell the emotion in Ricochet's wife. So that makes total sense. I don't mind them leaning into it. Bron Breakker, look, I think back to the amount of like to the Rybacks and the amount of like, you know, to the Veer and to the amount of like the big indestructible monsters that we saw try to be booked over the last 10, 15 years where we just like we let them beat a whole bunch of jobbers and they say the same thing, same phrase. But they're handling this rollout of Bron Breakker very well. They're giving it meat on the bone. They're giving it layers. It's not just fee-fi-fo-fum. There's something there. And of course, the fact that he's, you know, a second-generation guy and Adam Pearce said here, dog-faced gremlin. There's a lot here to play with. And this seems like it's got a lot of potential with Bron Breakker. He really feels like he's somebody he should be buying stock for. And then the crowd's into it, too. I mean, whether it's how fast he goes off the ropes, whether it's how hard he hits you with a spear, the agility and to do that middle rope, top rope, do a little charisma pose, and then the Frankenstein of that. That's unreal. That is, Braun Breaker is like what WCW would have wished Goldberg could have been. Mm-hmm. The physicality and intensity, but also had a little clue of what the frick he was doing, and had a little panache, had a little flair for the dramatic. Understood what you were doing here. Mm-hmm. Braun Breaker is what WCW wished they would have had in 98 with Goldberg.
That, Jimmy, I'm glad that Justin said that, because that is actually what I was thinking as I was watching. Like, this feels, and it's very too early to tell for sure, but it does feel a bit like Goldberg, where when Goldberg came out, it was like, mm-hmm. this guy is a force of nature coming through here. And it's just, I don't know if it's because of how fast he is, or agile, or the charisma, or whatever it is, but I'm just like, dude, I just want to see this guy run through everybody. Like, put him in the world title. Give him Damian Priest. I want to see him fight everybody. Give him a heat fly. Let's see what he does.
Yeah, but it's a little bit of everything, Jack. It's everything you mentioned there. And it's the way he puts it together there. Whoever's working with him, or whether it's him himself, everything he does means something. It's very, very intense. You know, like you said, hitting the ropes at 23 miles an hour. But he'll take somebody like a Ricochet, shoot him into the corner, and he hits the turnbuckles at like 32 miles an hour. That's how forceful it is. Everything he does is forceful. And then he pulls out a move like that. There are a lot of big guys out there that could do great, incredible, high-flying moves, but they don't put them in the right places. They think just throwing them in a match matters. What he did was he saved it for the end, did that Frankensteiner off the top, which was beautiful. It was incredible. Then hit his finish. Mm-hmm. And it meant that much more by doing it that way. And this guy's got all the tools, and I think it's going to be interesting. They're going the right route with him. And hats off to Ricochet, because selling his butt off the way he did, even on offense, did an incredible job. And I know people are going, well, Ricochet deserves better. Ricochet deserves a lot of praise for what he did tonight, because he helped get Braun Breaker over, and people are now waiting to see what's next with this beast.
Yeah, great stuff all around there. We had Sheamus versus Ludwig Kaiser. I'm ashamed that it's this far down in the list of things we're talking about. This was just a packed week. These two had a run-in last week, so they had a match scheduled for tonight. Things start with an attack on the injured knee. The ref is about to stop the fight at one point, but Sheamus says, "Is that all you got?" Sheamus fires back, but Ludwig eventually takes advantage of the knee again and rolls Sheamus up for the win. Justin, I think it's very clear that WWE sees very big things for Kaiser after tonight.
Yeah, this is the biggest win of his career. I love the fact that, you know, he was part of being the lackeys for Gunther, and he's completely broken out to be his own star, still associated with Gunther, but his own star. And yeah, they obviously see something in him to have Sheamus lose to him, and then the match. Good. One of the hardest hitting matches I can recall. And there's been no shortage of them to choose from lately in WWE, mm-hmm. with Gunther, with Drew. And but this match was just physically brutal to watch, but so damn entertaining. It started the show. It was the first match of the show, right? And we're just now getting to it, because there's all this other character and promo stuff that happened elsewhere. Monday Night Raw, I know SmackDown was dubbed for a little bit as becoming the A show, and it got all the money it got from Fox and whatever. Right now, Monday Night Raw, even though it's 3 hours, and 3 hours is long for a weekly show, Monday Night Raw, in my mind, is absolutely in the driver's seat right now as the A show.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
And it's a show that doesn't have Cody Rhodes as the champion.
Right.
No.
Which is wild.
No, yeah. If you think about most of their big stars are injured right now, their biggest stars. So if they don't have Seth Rollins, they don't have Becky Lynch, they don't have, well, she's not Punk. Injured, but she's not, they don't have Punk. They don't have, and still, it's just incredible. Jimmy, I want your thoughts on the match, and I want your thoughts. Is it possible that I feel like they're building towards a big comeback for Sheamus down the road? Like, he's taking some L's. I got a feeling he's going to have a big comeback story, though.
That's an interesting take. I think if they go that route, it's going to be a Sheamus that we've seen angry Sheamus before, but it has to be a different level angry Sheamus, where he just comes back and he is a wrecking machine and goes through everybody. But Ludwig Kaiser right now, I'm a big fan of his right now. I'm on board the Ludwig train. This guy does everything well, from his offense, from his selling, again, from his facial expressions, the way he bumps. It's not like traditional flat backing and stuff like that. When Sheamus was leveling him, you know, he took the bump like a regular human being, not like a wrestler. He didn't take a pro wrestling bump. It's like he spun around to his front side, on it landed on his stomach, kind of thing. It's little things that I see Randy Orton do.
Yeah,
it's almost like he's taking cues from him. But he's very good on the mic. You know, he's got a hell of a future ahead of him, and he can hang in those big slap, not just slap fests. What is it? What was it? How was it referred to?
Banger?
Big meaty, yeah.
Or big meaty men slapping meat.
Slapping meat, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. He can hang bumping in those kind of matches. Yeah, something along those lines. But that match was a hell of a match. I enjoyed it. And, you know, a lot of times, I was going to say, are they going to work the knee again? Because I've seen that in a lot of matches lately, where the knee seems to be the target of a lot of guys, you know, heels targeting the knee.
But and Braun tonight.
Yeah. But in this case, it worked because of the way the finish worked out. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of the deadliest move in pro wrestling right now, the roll-up. But in this case, it worked. And when he hooked it tight. He just didn't roll him up. He cranked it, which is the right way to do it.
Something I loved about working the knee in this one is I got to give Michael Cole credit. He's so good at what he does. But how before they even threw to Sheamus in the back in his promo, mentioning Sheamus was out because of a knee injury that kept him on the shelf. And then, so then they do the promo. He walks out. Then Kaiser hits the knee. It's like, oh, he did it. We all know he had the knee injury, but it also wasn't like obvious in your face saying it right before it happened. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just very smart planting a little seed so that we as viewers like, oh, I get why he's doing that. And it all makes sense. Just very well done, done there. Of course, Michael Cole has been doing it for a while, so of course it's well done. But Natalya, Kiana James, last thing of the night. The real thing here, Justin, Kiana James, clean win over Natalya. We talked about her contract being up. Maybe that's why that happened. But another person, I mean, Kiana, a clean win over Natalya for someone debuting, that's a pretty big deal.
It is. Even if Natalya's contract wasn't in question, I still think this is what they would have done, just because – you know, Natalya is a vet, but like I said, I think they've kind of booked her as high up as they're going to, and they want to put some stock in Kiana James. She was one of the few NXT talent that was drafted to Raw, so of course you're going to want to have her roll out some W's here. Get back to me on her character, on her promo. I still need to hear more. Need to get more. But visual business, visually, just looking at her, she looks like she's got. She looks interesting and entertaining. So I'm here for more.
Jimmy, for Kiana James, I don't know how much you watch NXT, but assuming you've never seen Kiana James before, how did she fare tonight to you? Did she buy herself interest in getting you to want to see her again? Do you want to see more from her? What's your take on Kiana James?
She got me interested in more of a curiosity factor, as opposed to, oh, I have to see this person wrestle again. She was fine in the ring. Of course, when you're in there with someone like Natalya, you can't help but have a good match. And Natalya is, you know, the consummate professional, did her job like she's supposed to do. But I agree with Justin. I want to see more character because, you know, it's almost like you said, if you're not watching NXT, you're not familiar with the person or their character, you want to see more. And that's what I want to see. I want to see more from her, you know, her character, you know, facials.
Baby Ice saying she'll take over GM when Braun finally takes out Adam Pearce. You know, I kind of thought something like that could happen, but if she's getting in the ring, I think they plan on her wrestling more than that character. She's a very, for people who don't know her whole character, she's like a business mogul. She's very business savvy. So I have to find out how that plays into the main roster, but that's what she's doing. So this was a great, great week for WWE or for Raw anyways. I really enjoyed it. Everyone in the chat, let me know what you thought. Justin, any final thoughts, some things you may be looking forward to this week, and where can the world find you online?
No, very solid Monday Night Raw. Just, I mean, as tons of stories, tons of characters, tons of things going on. So it is right now, Raw is must see. At Justin LaBar, follow me on social, Twitter, Instagram, whatever you fancy. And you can hear me next in full length Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon. Busted open Sirius XM radio, channel 156 on the radio or on the app on demand. Or there's a condensed version via the podcast that is free. So I will be there Sunday to wrap up all that happens this week.
And Jimmy Corderas, what about you? Anything you're looking forward to? And where can we find you?
Well, first of all, I enjoyed Raw tonight. I thought it was a good show. As far as what I'm looking forward to next this week, looking forward to Wednesday to see how they, you know, AEW delivers matches. But I want to see what goes on around those matches and see. They're starting to turn a little bit of a corner. I want them to progress in that form and fashion. I want to see what happens on Friday night to see how the Powder Blue Blazer turns out with Cody and AJ. I thought that was very interesting what happened last Friday. And as far as where you can find me, here with Triple J on Mondays, and of course with you, and I guess George is joining us this Wednesday.
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, after Dynamite should be an interesting one. And you know, the Roughing It Up podcast with my good brother in stripes, Brian Hebner, and RJ, who holds the glue together. This past week we had Les Thatcher, and he had us in stitches. He's as sharp as a tack. It's amazing. And this week we have one half of the Quebecers, the fabulous Rougeau brothers. Raymond Rougeau is joining us, which is going to be a lot of fun. And
oh, very cool.
And you can catch my ref and rants every day almost every day from Monday to Friday on all my social media platforms. You know, just little critiques here that I, not to tear down, but to help tighten some screws.
And, you know, I thought this was a very underrated, great week of WWE. So it's got very high marks from me. You can find me at Real Jack Farmer across all social media. And next time you'll see me is on Wednesday covering AEW Dynamite. It sounds like it's going to be me, Jimmy, and George. So that'll be a fun group. We usually have some pretty fun banter on that show. It goes off the rails a little bit, but hey, it's a fun time. And also I'm going to be joining George covering Battleground, which will be very fun to see because it'll be at the UFC Apex Performance Center. Yeah. What's it called? Something like that. Anyways, it'll be a fun show. I'm very excited to see it. So check that out after that show here on Wrestling Inc. And also thank you to everyone who joined us. JT, Bernie, Dylan, Keith J, Laura Rock, Solve, and everybody else. Always appreciate you. Please like, comment, share, subscribe. That does it for us. Make sure to follow Wrestling Inc. on all social media for all your wrestling news. Make sure to check out the NXT After Show tomorrow after NXT. That does it for us, and I'm going to hit the end stream button.
Yeet fly.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.